At the edges of the hall were timber platforms, filled with rammed earth and layered with woolen rugs, and it was on those platforms that we lived, up above the drafts. The hounds stayed on the bracken-strewn floor below, where lesser men could eat at the year's four great feasts. There was no feast that night, just bread and cheese and ale, and my father waited for my brother and wondered aloud if the Danes were restless again. "They usually come for food and plunder," he told me, "but in some places they've stayed and taken land."
"You think they want our land?" I asked.
"They'll take any land," he said irritably.
He was always irritated by my questions, but that night he was worried, and so he talked on.
"Their own land is stone and ice, and they have giants threatening them."
I wanted him to tell me more about the giants, but he brooded instead.
"Our ancestors," he went on after a while, "took this land. They took it and made it and held it. We do not give up what our ancestors gave us. They came across the sea and they fought here, and they built here, and they're buried here. This is our land, mixed with our blood, strengthened with our bone. Ours."
He was angry, but he was often angry. He glowered at me, as if wondering whether I was strong enough to hold this land of Northumbria that our ancestors had won with sword and spear and blood and slaughter. We slept after a while, or at least I slept. I think my father paced the ramparts, but by dawn he was back in the hall, and it was then I was woken by the horn at the high gate, and I stumbled off the platform and out into the morning's first light. There was dew on the grass, a sea eagle circling overhead, and my father's hound streaming from the hall door in answer to the horn's call. I saw my father running down to the low gate, and I followed him until I could wriggle my way through the men who were crowding onto the earthen rampart to stare along the causeway. Horsemen were coming from the south. There were a dozen of them, their horses' hooves sparkling with the dew. My brother's horse was in the lead. It was a brindled stallion, wild-eyed and with a curious gait. It threw its forelegs out as it cantered, and no one could mistake that horse. But it was not Uhtred who rode it. The man bestride the saddle had long, long hair the colour of pale gold, hair that tossed like the horse's tails as he rode. He wore mail, had a flapping scabbard at his side, and an axe slung across one shoulder, and I was certain he was the same man who had danced the ore shafts the previous day. His companions were in leather or wool, and as they neared the fortress, the long-haired man signalled that they should curb their horses as he rode ahead alone. He came within bowshot, though none of us on the rampart put an arrow on the string. Then he pulled the horse to a stop and looked up at the gate. He stared all along the line of men, a mocking expression on his face. Then he bowed, threw something on the path, and wheeled the horse away. He kicked his heels and the horse sped back, and his ragged men joined him to gallop south. What he had thrown onto the path was my brother's severed head. It was brought to my father, who stared at it a long time, but betrayed no feelings. He did not cry, he did not grimace, he did not scowl. He just looked at his eldest son's head, and then he looked at me.
"From this day on," he said, "your name is Uhtred."
Which is how I was named.